Welcome to Bankless Africa, a podcast by Africans on building and innovating Web3 into a new frontier for the people of Africa. I'm your host, Miss Purple, and each episode, I get together with some wonderful people across the continent and the diaspora to talk, ideate, and dream about the bright future of our people. Stay tuned for another exciting episode. This particular panel was a very fun one, titled Web3 Value Systems. The panel was moderated by Bankless Africa contributor Yofi Anan, who picked the panelists' brains on how music, gaming, art, and seamless access to funds are not just industries to be looked at separately, but rather that they can in fact all be interconnected building blocks of a bankless and verifiable value system. The panelists for this conversation included ArtsHelp co-founder and COO Adiam Gafu, Clockmaker and MATLAB's co-founder Jake Murphy, BitSeeker founder Atsu Davo, and the head of communications at Zilliqa, Alexander S. Spears. Alex was also an integral part of the summit's more laid-back second day program, which was the esports day. This saw young African gamers being introduced to Zilliqa's ecosystem and competed in various fun tournaments. More gamers, artists, and musicians in Africa are looking for spaces and ways in which they can exist without fearing the fine print. This panel proves that although we still have a long way to go, we have also come very far, and it is clear that the frontier could in fact hold the answers to the most pressing issues in all the aforementioned industries. We hope you enjoy this panel.
So this panel is going to be based on the Web3 value system. I'd like to introduce my panelists and welcome them on stage. So I'll first start with Adiam. Please round of applause. While she's making her way, we have Jake Murphy. Mr. Achu and Alex. Please, a round of applause. Alex? So, without much ado, I would like them to introduce themselves. They are really, you know, bigger players in the Web3 industry. So this is going to paint a picture about what they do in the space. So just imagine this being our canvas and the Web3 value system and what and how all of them are contributing to it. So, you know, we have a stroke of Bristol red paints from Alex. We have another stroke, different paints from all the other players. So when we finish the whole panel, I'm going to have a very wonderful artistic rendition of what the Web3 value system is. So thank you. So Alex, please.
Hello. Hi. Yeah. Hi. So I'm Alex Spears. I'm here today representing Zilliqa. I'm the communications director at Zilliqa. And we're really grateful to be part of this event. Our new CEO, he is Ghanaian. He told me to let everyone know he's half Ghanaian, half Scottish, so the Jerry Rawlings of Web3 is how he's described himself to me. At Zilliqa, we're really focused at the moment on making Web3 accessible to everybody. We think that there is so much potential in this space, but the real use cases, the real tangible use cases, still quite haven't materialized in the way that we hoped it to. So we're trying to flip that value system around a little bit, change how these use cases are going to be developed, and really try to be a leader in that space. So that's kind of our approach for today.
Fantastic.
All right. Hi, my name is Achu Davo. I'm the founder and CEO of BitSeeker. BitSeeker is a Pan-African remittance platform. We help people send money from one African country to the other. So fiat to fiat, but powered by crypto in the background. And we've been doing that for about 3 years now. We're in about 11 countries. We've processed over $100 million on our platform. But now we're pivoting to become a peer-to-peer crypto trading platform. Our aim is to compete with Binance in African countries. So we hope to launch that pivot sometime in the, you know, within the next few months, sometime this year. So that's basically that's what we
do. Fantastic.
Hi, my name is Adiam, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer at Arts Help. I don't know if you were here earlier, but our founder was here, and he still talked about what we did. But one of the things that brought us here is one of our programs called the Conscious Crypto Creator Program. And what it is, it's a program for artists from around the world to be able to learn about the Web3 space in its entirety. A lot of times you can't participate in a conversation if you don't even understand it. And so what we do is provide education and resources for artists around the world to be able to participate actively.
Come on.
Yo, I'm Jake Murphy. I'm the one that took 24 hours to get here. I'd love to say that it was somebody else's fault. It was my own fault. I basically arrived to the airport 3 hours, give yourself time, otherwise you will miss your flight. So I took a detour to Ethiopia and here we are. My background is sort of, I guess the main thing that I kind of is part of my day-to-day life is this idea of building equity, what that means, which is relevant to this conversation. So I sort of focused the majority of my time on two companies. One which is Clockmaker, which was a company I founded 7 years ago, and the basic premise is that we help organizations with a mantra that said, do well, do good. And it's this idea that commercial business success and positive impact should live synergistically as opposed to separate ideals. So we'll work with organizations to ultimately kind of do a bit of a reset and see what they're trying to do, where they're trying to play, and how they're going to win, and ultimately trying to build this narrative that they can build equity as they go. And that sort of stems from sometimes delivering creative campaigns or actually even taking positions with founders or different businesses, so we kind of are blended to the creative venture studio in that regard. The other side of that is a company called Matter, which we haven't launched yet. But a lot of my background was in music. I love music. Music's kind of also like a lot of the just kind of it's helped me communicate with a lot of other people around the world. It's been the biggest reason why I travelled. And what was interesting with music is that post-COVID particularly, and I've also managed an artist for about 4.5 years and seen deals and economics around music. Post-COVID, a lot of my peers just didn't have cash, didn't have money. People were just sort of, for the first time when live disappeared, they started looking at their record deals and being like, I don't really see where we make money. Which is an ongoing conversation which we can build on, but in that time, I'd sort of dabbled in Web3 a little bit. Again, sort of initial interest was like decentralization as a means to redistribute equity, which I love that whole notion. And so I literally Googled how to launch a token, which I wouldn't recommend for everybody, because it has problems as well. But Googled how to launch a token with the basic premise that every time it was bought and sold, a portion would go into a pot for which we would give out to music creators for free around the world. And we built a network to do that. And we gave, the thing was a success, which was interesting. It went from naught to $21 million in about 13 hours. And we distributed about $1.4 million in a month. And we did anything from kids' tuition in Jamaica to community music studios, to worked with Fam House in LA to build educational courses for black females, to also supporting about 275 creators, give or take, to support their EPs, tours, whatever you wanted to do. And that sort of, that process was really interesting because it sort of led on to the fact that A, money is never the solve, just isn't. But when starting to look at it, what we'd done as a music industry or creator community of the music, we'd normalized this idea of not making money from music. And so we did about $2.5 million revenue in that period, and we invested that secondary portion of money into trying to fix music streaming, which has kind of been the ongoing concern now. And if I take Africa as a concept now, we look at music has started to surpass to the revenue a lot of the traditional exports, and yet that revenue does not stay on the continent, which is a problem. A lot of people don't pay rights. You have a problem with metadata. There's a lot of issues that come out of that. But it means when you sort of take a top-down view of the streaming economy, which is now 88% of all music revenue in the US, so streaming is kind of going to be the dominant revenue stream for music. there's a real problem in terms of a gap that starts to appear. And when we did some digging, effectively, to try and find missing stream revenue. And we've realized that between the birth of Spotify to now, there's probably a liability of about $11 to $16 billion in terms of what's been missed. So we focus our time on trying to figure that out.
Wow, fantastic interest by everyone. Definitely can relate to what you did say about royalties. We have one of the famous artists in the world, Kanye, was speaking about this in the World Council. And we also have Shatawali as well, and also like Sarkozy also speaking about music royalties being a problem in Africa and Ghana. So we definitely hit a nail right on the head with that as well. So I'd now like to delve into my first question. You guys are builders in like all the famous verticals like gaming, P2P, now P2P, and arts, and also like music royalties. So like, what are the key values that you see in the ecosystem? What is going to drive it as well?
I mean, I might start off. I mean, for me, the big thing, the real value that Web3 brings is equitability of opportunity. Web3 is really key in kind of reducing the barriers, reducing the friction between people, between businesses, between countries. I mean, one of the running themes that's kind of picked up for me throughout the day is how difficult it has been for so many of the builders here to get things off the ground, whether it's the banking system, whether it's regulators, whether it's anything. And the inequitability of opportunity that we've seen so far in the traditional business world, I think that's really where Web3 can bring big value, not just to Africa. I mean, we're looking at Africa today, obviously, at the conference, but globally, this is kind of the great leveler for me across business.
Yeah, so I think that in Africa, Web3 has extreme practicality, because in the Western world, there are a lot of theories about what crypto is and what benefits it can bring. But in Africa, the results or the benefits of crypto is very tangible. I've been thinking about why we started Bitica. So it's far more easier to send money from abroad to Africa than from one African country to the next. So like, it's more difficult to send money to Togo than to US or UK or anywhere like that. So a product like Bitica was needed in the last few years to fill that gap. And there was no way where we would have been able to achieve that without Web3, without crypto being used as a settlement layer to move that money around. So in Africa, I think Web3 is about practicality. The benefits of Web3 are very, very practical and tangible. It's the most simple things about helping people save more money, move things faster, move amounts that they would not have been able to move. So it's in Africa, it's very, very practical, like very tangible value that Web3 brings into people's life. And it can happen whether people interact with Web3 directly or indirectly, like in the case of my app again, Bitica, where we help people move money with the power of crypto without them knowing that crypto is powering it necessarily. So you can put CDs, move it to Safer, it's moved with Bitcoin or Ethereum or any other such crypto, but the people using the app, they collect that value, they're able to do that transfer, save time, save money. But a lot of them don't even know that they're using crypto. So the benefits are practical and it can either be direct or indirect. So to me, that's how I see the value of crypto Web3.
So I do agree with both things you're saying, but I also think for artists and people in our community specifically, it's freedom. Web3 provides a freedom that a lot of artists are, they've never seen. So, and Jake will touch more about it later on, but artists have the ability now to mint their own work. There's a lot of gatekeeping in art, so that's auction houses and galleries and such, and they control a lot of the revenue that the artist makes, and they not only control it, but they hinder it sometimes because, they may not feel that your art is right for whatever they're trying to promote. And so, like Web3, art is a tool, right? So art allows the freedom to do what you want, to express yourself how you want. And Web3 came out of a need of people wanting to control what they have and to control how they make it. And the same thing with art. So I think that Web3 brings a lot of freedom to the artists. It also brings a lot of accountability. So, and not your royalty thing, but with smart contracts, artists are able to track, you know, where their money's coming from, where it's going, how much they're getting, and, you know, it's right there on paper. And I think that it allows for transparency and also a lot of freedom.
Come on.
I probably relate to this t-shirt, I mean this shout for the youth, come on. But this t-shirt is of the Big Six, obviously the new GCC, and I think this idea that they were proposing was at the time was around self-government. Mainly because of collective failures from people trying to govern at the time, and still now. And I think the great thing about that, and Afropolitan would speak to that as well, is this idea that if we can start to leverage communities, you look at Rihanna having a Fenty moment, she's built her business, her sort of wealth, if you like, from understanding that she has a community that she could actually leverage, and she's become a billionaire off the back of it. Kanye is another good example. Like, there's so many people that have started to realize that value that lies in the audiences that they have. So being able to find interesting ways to utilize that without relying on economic models that exist that currently don't really serve the artist, then that's always going to be of interest. I think from our side, I think it's really important when you're, because I've seen a lot of Web3 projects kind of sent a lot of different things, and we didn't jump into NFTs or jump into a lot of stuff for a long time for the basic reason that we really needed to be sure of what it is we were trying to do. And I think that's the same rule applies in anything. You need to be really clear on what it is that you're trying to get out of things, because it's very hard to act ethically in an irrational market. And I think when we launched a token, that was probably the worst, and it wasn't the best point of my life, but it was one of the worst points of my life, I would say, about 2 days in, when people send you 5,000 messages a day, be like, yo bro, when this, like, that is so intense. And they're not necessarily your people. And I think it's really important to do that. And so I spent a lot of time saying, if you want to go with this ideal, then this is great. If you don't, please leave. Because our whole process with this was to change the economics of streaming. That was it. So in order to do that, to build equity for music creators, we're going to go down a path which doesn't really feel glamorous, and we focus more on the plumbing side of music, which is a different thing. So you either liked it or you didn't. But what's really interesting now, and a fast forward a year on, which has been an interesting year, but we're at a stage where we have, in our community, 1,700 people that completely align with the ideal. And then when you have 1,700 people that just continues to build, I would say I have made more ridiculous relationships in the last month than I had in the last 11 months prior. And it's because right now every single person attracts the people that have that same energy, and we've unlocked, I guess, that Web3 community that really want to do the same thing as us. So I mean, that's what I take from it.
That's fantastic. Contributions, equity, education, freedom.
So at this point in time, we have Zilliqa building gaming systems, we have P2P, we have Twitter, and we have like tokenized artist streaming services. So I'd like to know, how is all these things consuming content online in the Web3 sense? So regards to all of this, how is all this changing the way creators and content people exist on the internet? I'll start with you.
Okay, how's it changing who exists?
The way we interact with content on the internet, consume, interact.
So, I'd say there have been great examples of people understanding, again, what I was saying about the Rihanna thing, is like people understand the value of having a strong community. If you've got that, you can build a business model, and. I think the problem with some of the logic I've found is that when you cannot learn as a collective or like as a society through scarcity. So that's some of the things, the pullback I would have, and say a lot of the energy went into building these sort of like very small, isolated communities, which is great. And I think which has happened to be an amazing thing that's come out of it. I think the when people have talked about interoperability and what that actually means is ultimately
it's the same reason why you have open source code, is that it's collaborative. And so I think the initial behavior of, I'm going to say crypto before Web3, was that it's us against the world. And then as the sort of retail investors climbed in, it kind of became semi-linked to the stock market, and. I think what people are realizing is that they're kind of linked now, which is kind of like they're the same. We want to partner with the big organizations. That's the way we'll make progress. So therefore, that collaboration element, I think, is really, really important. And for the stuff we're doing now is like, we have two components. One, which is called Air, which is now all around streamer royalties, so you just go and find Mr. Streamer Royalties. And the other is we've built a streaming platform which is changing the economic model. So that's what we're to do. And we're exploring ways we can make parts of that platform open source, so we could have developers contribute code, they'll get a kickback, and then everybody starts to benefit as part of that process. So I think the biggest energy that I've, the shift that I've felt coming out of the market that took a turn, is that people are starting to collaborate more.
So the shift that I've seen in the value transfer industry is the fact that location has now been taken out of the equation as far as when you're moving value around. Because before crypto, if you wanted to send value, let's say money or anything valuable, the location of the person was central to that transfer. So think about even Momo, you can only send someone in Ghana. So location is in that. If you want to send a switch, you need the location of the person. So with Web3 and with crypto, the world has, you know, become more or less a global village where you can send value to anyone without any regard for where they are. So I think that it's very akin. I always compare it to like what email did to communication, right? Yeah, think about before email, when people were writing letters, you had to know which country you were sending to. It would determine how much you would pay, how long it would take to get there. But when email came along, communication just went out of the equation. And think about all the opportunities that it created in terms of how many people you can now communicate with around the world. Just the business opportunities, like educational opportunities for people. I think the same is going to happen in the value transfer space as well, because if Momo is only restricting you to transacting or doing business with people in Ghana, if you add something like a stablecoin USDT, that opens up, you know, the global market. You think about just how much more productive we could be as a society. So for me, that's the biggest shift that I'm seeing in Web3 with crypto, is that location of where the value is being sent is becoming obsolete as part of the equation of, you know, transfer of value. And I think it's just gonna, you know, open countless doors of, you know, what we can do, the value we can create.
So just going on to what you were saying about, you know, creating that sort of community that people are looking for. So during the pandemic especially, there was this need to know what is happening in the world. And so I think that by a lot of people focusing on going online and going digital, they're able to find communities that they can relate to. And by doing that, a lot of the artists, especially in our community, learned about Web3, they learned about NFTs and crypto and all that, and then they were able to capitalize on the community that they built for themselves. You know, we've had artists in our community who have gone from, you know, small scale artists to be able to make a full living and full careers and support their families using their art, you know, digitally, and using that content to also spread messages of what they're thinking about. And so, for example, some of the work that we do is that we tackle social issues through art. So, you know, sometimes the ideas and concepts are so big and people can't understand them, so they shy away from them. But we use art and we use technology to be able to make them very digestible for people. So that's how I think we're helping people consume even this information. We created a curriculum about Web3 and consuming it consciously, because people didn't understand it. So if you're not part of that conversation, you know, how can you monetize from it? How could you contribute to it? So
from a Zilliqa perspective, I'll use quite a specific shift that I guess we haven't seen yet, but one that we're really hoping to affect. And that's, I'm going to use in the gaming space. I mean, I saw before when they asked, I think we've got a lot of gamers in the room. So one of the most interesting things that I found out a little while ago is that
Gaming in 2021 was a $200 billion industry, and it's continuing to grow. But the most interesting part that I found about that was that 75% of that revenue comes from in-game purchases, in-game items, skins, in-game currencies, all of these kind of things. Huge, huge number, and one that's set to get even bigger. I mean, ARK Invest, familiar with Kathy Wood and some of the interesting work that she does, shall we say, they're predicting that by 2025, 95% of gaming revenue will come from in-game purchases. But it's every time that these purchases are made, it's a very closed ecosystem. You buy your skin, you buy whatever it is, you don't actually have any real ownership of that. When the next game comes out, you can't transfer that over, it's gone. If you can't sell that on, if you can't trade that on, it's gone. It's a completely closed ecosystem. And with Web3, we have the opportunity to change that by putting these items on the blockchain, by decentralizing the ownership of these. We open so many opportunities for people, whether that's something for making money from this, whether it's just democratizing the opportunities that come from this huge, huge revenue source that has been completely closed off to everyone except some of these major publishers. Opening up that industry, I think, opens up a huge opportunity, and it's one that we're really interested in trying to affect.
I'll build on that slightly. So it was like Fortnite, you take skins in Fortnite. That revenue surpassed the entirety of Burberry last year, which is pretty mental, I think, when you like start to think about it, just in-game skins in Fortnite. I think from a personal standpoint as well, I eventually want to transition using music as a catalyst to do so into connectivity. And interestingly, about gaming, predominantly younger audience, I has been for a lot of time. I see Roblox has now got like average user up to like 16, 17, they're kind of climbing. So they publish, but we'll see. But the reality of that is 88% of the world's youth live outside of the Western world. And what I've found, a lot of the energy is always focused on the Western world. So it's like, let's just focus out, let's build systems that work for that domain. And even like in sort of early crypto, bear in mind, from doing a token when I'd never spoken to anyone about crypto ever, I was saying, yo, I'm gonna give you some ETH. Like, what are you saying? Is that cool? And people were like, what's ETH? And people were sending me their home addresses when I was trying to give them Ethereum. So it was like, yeah, send the ETH address. And people would act like they knew what was going on, but they just did not at all. And I think what was interesting is when you started to break that down further, the percentage of people that hold crypto right now is very small, which obviously market growth is massive. I think it's still like 5% or something. But the barriers were, a lot of it was language. When people hear a word they don't know, I'm sure a lot of people heard words today, they have no idea what's going on, but they nod and approve, just like, yeah, cool, sounds good. That's a big problem. When people bought a shitcoin, as they're called, and it literally went to shit, that's usually when people get off crypto, a lot of people can relate. And then also when the scamming was a big thing as well. So it just kind of came through as a lot of that. And then as that translates, if people don't work to take those problems and make it really, really easy to digest for people outside the Western world, then you have a problem. And I think as this sort of growth, and I would compel a lot of blockchains, a lot of people who are really sort of, I guess when they look at Africa and think, oh, there's a big user base, I think the reality is 2/3 of the world's youth have no access to a working internet connection. So clearly there's a lot of work to do, and this is why I go back to the collaboration piece again. Our angle is trying to fix music, which is a shit show. But I think there is an element of us all trying to make what we all do in this room and what we all do collaboratively, really dumb it down to a degree where we can say, how do we work together? How do we progress? How do we do stuff that's not in this sort of echo chamber that other people can pick up in the same way that skins, like, you can't take anywhere? I think that is the same with knowledge. And so we've just got to do a lot more to try and be like, look, this is how we're going to like give you a platform. This is how we're going to like build from here. And I actually asked a question to someone earlier about where would they go for Ghanaian developers, just physically. And the question was, are there one person over here and one person there? So things like this, obviously Dell went on, is so, so important at being able to start to bring people together to actually ask questions and to ultimately learn where we can all work together. And the final point, I love talking, so when I was here, I did 2 weeks
30 December, in extended three times. I was here through January, but it was worst. And when Abdul, for Afro Future, they put on a panel that was specifically for black females accessing funding and how that would happen. And it was really, really interesting. You have three amazing females who came over who were US-based, who kind of like, yo, you guys spent like $1,000 on your hair, which is like, that's not a thing. So there's a gap there. But what was interesting is five people stood up to pitch their businesses, and not one person looked at the other person and thought they could collaborate. Which when we were sat there going, yo, you could work with this person, you want to understand what an investor looks like, that person's got an investor, you want to understand how you get a product to that degree of specificity, that's that. So I think that's one of the main takeaways that I think we should all try and do, is again, like, build things like this to help people working together.
And I guess maybe even to build on that point a little bit, I mean, I think for me, like coming at this from a comms director perspective, I think one of the biggest issues or one of the biggest challenges that as an industry we kind of face is the inherently negative connotations that crypto, that blockchain, that maybe now NFT bring to so many people. So many people who haven't been exposed to this beyond the headlines, which so often are so negative. Is such a tough thing to overcome. And if we want to get from that 5% kind of adoption rate to truly mainstream, to getting everybody involved in this, I think that's kind of a battle that we're really going to have to take head on. And it's something that for all of us, I mean, for the builders, we need to be better. We need to be better at communicating this and telling the story. But it goes so much further. I mean, you see all the people in this room today. If every one of those people kind of spoke to two or three people about the benefits, about how this can work, the network effect is massive. Like, the potential there is enormous, but we kind of have to not just be aware of these kind of issues, but be prepared to take them head on and make sure that we can kind of get past that reputational issue, because otherwise we're probably doomed from the outset.
100%. I think it also comes from this value of like instant commercial gain. I'd say in the UK is like much worse than the US. It's like people go and say, yo, I'm into whatever name we're giving it. I think you should separate crypto and Web3. We should like start to make the differentiations. It's a very different category of people in some of these rooms. But everybody was like rushing in for commercial gain. And so my biggest problem, when we were supporting creators, we were hit up by every single NFT platform, every single chain at the time. It's like, yo, we want to fuck with your creators. This is great. Like, let's do something with WizKid. WizKid sold out the O2 in 12 minutes. In the UK. So as we're all aware, like Afrobeats, Afro House, Amapiano, we love the energy, everyone cottons onto it and they go, yo, WizKid would be really good to pay $1 million to bring him onto the platform, to validate our platform, to then grow whatever token thing we're launching, and then leave it at that. And so again, it's like, how do we be responsible as people in the space to say, in the same way that you would work with youth, is that there is a whole load of work done before you actually do a deal. There's a whole load, in the music industry, we've glamorized signing record deals, which we need to stop. Like LL Cool J did an amazing talk on it. He basically said, like, music industry changed so much since he was around, that when he was here, it was like the jungle, and now it's like desert. Like, if you weren't signed to a major label in the past, nobody heard your music and nobody cared. Now, everybody makes music. And like, it's a big part of our challenge is fixing metadata. The reason being that if you don't have the correct metadata, you do not get paid. So in music, you have the master side of the record and the publisher side of the record. And the reason why that's relevant in streaming is because there is now so many songs, it's like about 100,000 songs a day on Spotify. About 10% of those songs have no publishing information whatsoever. And about 25% are incomplete. So by the end of this year, there'll be another 9.1 million songs that do not pay out on publishing. And if you do not understand publishing, which I would say is pretty much 99% of the music industry, even people that work in it, is that there are NDAs between the platforms, so you never have a full data set. No one really understands the royalty statements. And if you do not check within 3 years, copyright law means that that money is no longer yours. So there's all these little things that, again, like from my end is like, how do we work with artists to kind of give them the tools to not go into a new sphere, which is what this is, and sign a bad deal. And the same as however we work with different people, I think we have a responsibility beyond bringing them in itself. So there's a lot of aftercare that comes.
Fantastic contributions. You both led on to two of my questions, which was how can we balance the potential benefits and risk involved? I think you mentioned the fact about the tokens, people just come in there just to, you know, get rich quick on the tokens. So if we just touch on that briefly or 30 seconds, how we can benefit
how we could balance the benefits of what they are doing to the risk, what people call the scams and all these things. How can we mitigate them and ensure that Web3 and what you are building has a good rep?
I think a lot of it's like ethics is like part of it. I think you meet some interesting characters, and then you meet some amazing people as well. And there's like your faith in humanity is restored. I think the way we've described it is that you give people the guardrails, like it's a bit like when you're bowling, you have the barriers up. I think so you don't allow people to literally fall off. And I think one thing, look, we started with a token, and now like, I've made touch the token, it's great, it does its thing, it's just fantastic. But we've built things that people can use. And so it's not a case of someone jumps in and loses a lot of money or whatever that is. So I think there's an obligation to anyone that starts to come into those environments, you have to kind of put some fail safes in place to make sure that it doesn't happen.
I think education is really important, and transparency. I think that a lot of people don't know what's happening, especially in the art world specifically. They don't know what's happening with their money. They don't know what's happening with their art. And so I think Web3 provides a level of transparency in, for example, like smart contracts and things like that, but also just educating themselves on what's happening in the industry. There's a lot of free resources out there and in many languages, and I think that that's what people need to utilize so that there is an opportunity for them to grow in the industry and mitigate some of these things that you're talking about.
I think that we need to build products for people at different levels of crypto expertise, right? Because if you look at a lot of products out there, it's like, yeah, it's a beautiful UI, decentralized wallet, but the average person you pick on the street would just have no idea what they're doing. Even the most well-designed, think about like Rainbow Wallet. Rainbow Wallet is like the most well-designed Web3 wallet out there, but give it to the most average person you meet on the street. It could literally be a college professor. They'll still have like a hard time understanding what it is. So I think that we don't have to just build blanket tools that, okay, we expect to cover the whole industry. There are different levels of tech expertise. There are different levels of crypto expertise. So we need to build different tools for different levels of crypto knowledge. That's what I think.
Alex? For me, I think it really needs to be a bit of a paradigm shift and come back to the focus on utility. That crypto isn't just a get-rich-quick scheme. We have to actually build products that integrate crypto, that are usable, that are going to generate value that's not just pump and dump and money going up. When crypto or blockchain, Web3, whatever you want to call it, when there's actual utility and usability on these tokens, and this narrative starts to shift away from just trying to pump, dump, get rich quick, I think that's when we'll really start to see a breakthrough in people's both their understanding of this and also their willingness to engage in these different products. But we have to actually build these good products first.
Talking about risk as well, I think that we have to also come to terms with the fact that we may have to make some compromises when building for the masses, right? And the compromise has to do with, it's pretty likely that for crypto to reach a billion people and billion users, we probably have to still marry a lot of Web2 ideas and Web2 interfaces into crypto to improve security, improve user experience, and to have people stick around. I think that's one thing. We've all been very maximalist, very purist when it has come to Web3. Just look at where it has led us, all the hacks, all the troubles, the scams that we've seen. So I think we probably have to accept some compromise and marry at Web 2.5.
No, I was just going to say your point earlier about creating different tools to meet people where they are. I think that's really important because, and I'm going to always bring it back to the artist community because that's who we serve. So our artist community a lot of the times has one of two things, you know, a short attention span, or you know, they don't have the technical knowledge to understand even what is a wallet. And so, you know, the reason why we created our program, and it's free to everybody, of course, is because there's a lot of people who cannot be part of this conversation. they don't even know what a blockchain is, let alone, you know, how to mint or anything like that. So before you get to, you know, advanced stages of understanding Web3, coming back to the very basics, you know, like what is a wallet? What's a hot wallet? What's a cold wallet? They don't know the difference, you know? And so, like you said, meeting people where they are is really important. And then also, and sort of coming to them where they are, and so even it doesn't have to be all digital right away. You got to bring people to that. You know, sometimes they're not even there yet, and that's really important for us, is to meet people where they are and then sort of help them grow to where they need to be to understand what's happening here.
Oh, and I think the like Reddit was a good example of that. Reddit looked brought, I think they were the biggest driver of new users into Web3. Yeah. So it just was that they managed to do it in a way that wasn't trying to give, again, it's a language barrier, so people end up didn't even realize they were doing it, and they were there. And I think you can build that learning base from just episodes like that.
Oh, fantastic. So this will be the last question, just 30 seconds, and we open up the, you know, questions for the audience. So we've spoken about the wonderful production building. I'd now like to ask, how are you making it inclusive for people, especially in Africa? I'm now bringing it home to Africa as well. You're launching, I think you have a fund, ADSOP has a fund that offers grants for creators. So I'd like to ask, how are you making it inclusive for people in Africa?
Cool. Well, fundamentally what we're trying to solve is to change the economics of streaming. So that applies to everybody. Right? In order to do that, you need to understand different nuances. I think this year was the 50th anniversary of hip-hop in the US, which is interesting because hip-hop's always been about innovation, literally into series every industry in the world. But I think, again, using the WizKid reference of when selling out the O2 in 12 minutes in London, I think the reality is as Afrobeat, Sound Piano, Afro House gets exported to the world, we've got to be really careful is that we don't go through all of the casualties that hip-hop went through and just normalize that as a thing that we're doing. So I guess where we're trying to sit is to, A, twofold, start to validate when people actually pay for rights clearances, which is a big problem, again, revenue being redistributed away from the concert, and also to start to be almost the plumbing underneath our music streaming layer, where we can start to track revenue that gets lost. And clearly, Adi was talking about education. If you do not understand the mechanics of royalties, you will have no idea what's happening, and it'll be too late for you to ever realize. So I guess a big part of what we're doing is trying to give people the tools and the knowledge and the resources to ultimately start to own and to normalize making money from the music they create.
So Ashu?
So it's about, please.
The question is, how are we creating inclusive
Africans? Yeah. So I've always built for Africa. I always continue to build for Africa. So even the pivots, so I said we're in 11 countries, so it's all African countries. I've been recently focusing heavily on Francophone Africa. I think that's a very marginalized part of Africa, like true and true. Focusing heavily on that as well, and with our B2B trading pivot as well, focusing heavily on Africa as well. So if I may say something a little controversial, I'll say that I've not been very happy with the fact that, you know, in literally every African country, Binance is the leading crypto product there, which it did not have to turn out that way, because we, the local African founders, were building heavily until our central banks turned on us and basically destroyed the dynamic where foreigners with deeper pockets were able to come and take over. So for me, building a peer-to-peer, it's more of an act. It's the most sensible thing to do. It's the biggest market in crypto within Africa. But in addition to that, it's also an act of rebellion on our part as well to reclaim our market. And I hope more African founders build things that are, you know, that their governments cannot shut down. Build crypto tools for their own citizens that their governments cannot shut down. Because I think the best crypto tools for Africa will be built by people who have the context, which is the local founders. So that's what I think.
Alex? For me, it's probably more of an industry-wide thing, and I think it's a recognition that the soft infrastructure is as important as the hard infrastructure, and that's having the education in place, having the support for people to actually onboard them. We can have the best technology in the world, but if it's completely inaccessible, if it's a closed door, then that's not what Web3 is. If we're going to equitize the opportunities for everybody else, we have to have those soft infrastructure, the education, the support in place to be able to bridge that gap and bring people onto it.
I think for us, I'll go back to the same thing, but you know, one is education, but two is also resources. I think it's really important that we also acknowledge the fact that, you know, you can educate people as much as you want, but you also need resources to back it up, and you need resources to also lift them up. So for us, we're here to listen. We're not here to tell people what you need. You know, every community is different. So in every country that we go to, that we support, we listen to what they're needing. So sometimes, you know, it may not be the education because they have it already, or it may not be that the education is in their language, right? So by being inclusive, specifically in Africa, like you were saying, like the Francophone market, a lot of times this Web3 education does not come in French even. So, you know, it's really important that, you know, if we're being inclusive, we have to ask the people that we want to include in this. And a lot of times that's not included. And so because we're an art community, it's very easy for us to enter spaces and to make people feel comfortable because we're talking to them in their own language a lot of the times. And so just meeting people where they are and asking them what they need and then also finding the resources from the people that have
it. Fantastic contributions from all our panelists.
Thank you for spending another episode with me. Just a reminder that none of what we share is financial advice, only opinions of the individuals that make this show possible. You can use the links in the show notes to do your own research. Don't forget to subscribe, share, and give us a rating on whatever platform you're listening from. We are our own wildest dreams, the hope of our own tomorrow. So until next time, keep innovating.